Welcome into your Friends with Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Brannis of the Kuhn and Friends Podcast, joined tonight by Ray Kuhn. How are you doing, Ray?
I'm good, Ben. How are you?
Good. You know, Ray, it's the midseason classic. You know, we're talking about NBA free agency today. Wait, NHL free agency? I feel like there's something supposed to be going on today that we're supposed to be talking about. I can't for the life. Must be preseason football, right, Ray?
Of course, I think there's some rookies in a training camp or two. Come on now, get those best ball drafts going.
Yeah. I wish there was something going on in baseball tonight, but for the life of me, I can't think of it. So, but anyway, how has everything been with you, Ray?
It's good. It's been good. It's been good. We're more, even though it's the All-Star break, we're more than halfway through the season. So far, so good. We'll see what happens. Next 2.5 months.
Yes. And let's also welcome in Colin Weatherwax. How are you doing tonight, Colin?
Doing good, Ben. How's it going?
It's going well. How's everything been with you? How's the football? I'm getting ahead of myself. How's baseball season treating you so far?
Baseball's been pretty decent. We're going to go over some guys that we were either high or low on. Probably make me look a little bit worse than I already do, but for the most part, it's been pretty decent so far.
That's good. That's good. And you excited for the midseason classic?
What is that again? Is that the NHL thing? Is that where they play outside? I don't know. I don't understand what happens.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's the Olympics, in all honesty. I mean, basically, it's just the Manny Machado trade day, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. I am aware of that day.
Wait, so now... Wait, hang on. Manny Machado's getting traded?
Yeah, I hear there's a good chance that he gets traded to Cuba for a prospect to be named later.
Okay.
Apparently, that's what the Orioles would, you know, likely try to do, because that's how they think.
Actually, I heard Real Madrid is looking for a striker, so...
And LeBron does need another star in L.A.
I mean, I guess we could always just send him to Texas Rangers, you know, maybe for their entire team. So
I'd be down.
I'm sure you
I'll
would.
I'll go watch just him pitch and field and hit.
Mets should just trade him for Jacob DeGrom, because DeGrom's going to leave in 2 years anyway. They're not going to get anything for him. They might as well get Manny Machado now, and then he'll leave during the summer, so that way much sooner. That's what should happen.
What, you mean you don't have faith that the Mets would spend money to keep Machado?
I don't even have faith that the Mets understand who their general manager is.
I don't think they know who the general manager is.
I don't even think they know who the backup general manager is. I don't think they know who the owner is. I don't even think they understand who's on their team.
Well, I think the owner's son thinks he's the general manager. So I think that's one problem.
So it's like Tim Tebow thinking he's a baseball player.
Exactly. But I mean, Colin's laughing now, then wait until September when I get to go to City Field and watch Tim Tebow play the outfield for the Mets.
I kind of want to pick him up in a 20-team league, because I know he's going to come up in September and actually get every day at bats, and I kind of need that in a 20-team league.
Wait, you mean he would get every day at bats over Matt Dendecker?
I'm pretty sure Matt Dendecker has been off the team for a few years.
Dendecker is back.
He's back.
He's already been traded like four times off the team.
He replaced the immortal Kevin Karasmerski. Or Karasmeki, exactly. And
Doug Mankiewicz?
Dendecker got a few starts in center field before the All-Star break. Ty Kelly's getting some playing time out there. So, I mean, by comparison, Timmy Tebow's looking pretty good.
That's great. That's what I really look forward to, is having the Mets not trade DeGrom, not trade anyone else of importance, and let's bring up Tim Tebow to play half the year.
Yeah. I think they only understand the pitching side of the game. They're still trying to figure out, you know, what you have to do to be a batter.
Oh, yeah, they should just listen to you and just keep employing Jay Bruce, right?
Oh, you mean the 18th-ranked outfielder by Colin going into the 2018 season?
Hey, oh, don't like, you worry. Like you said, Colin and I were sharing a team. He's like, oh, man, Jay Bruce is going to be real good, man. He's He's got like 35 home run power, 100 RBIs, and he's going to hit like 262. Don't worry, he's going to be like a top 20 outfielder this year. I can feel it. He's
Ray, there's still 2.5 months left in the season, so it could still happen.
The dude doesn't even have any legs.
Jay Bruce is in the Bermuda Triangle of Mets injuries right now. Nobody knows where he is, what's wrong with him, or when he's coming back.
He's probably riding a shuttle vehicle with Yoenis Cespedes.
But no, Cespedes is actually playing rehab games, and he might be back on Friday. But I mean, in fairness,
he won't be back.
He'll have a setback.
but they're playing the Yankees in the Yankee Stadium, so he can at least DH for a few games. Or at least I think they are. But in fairness to Colin, I also did think Bruce was going to hit 30 homers and drive in 100 runs. But I ranked him as my 36th outfielder, not my 18th.
Yeah, but I liked him as well. I mean, I don't know what Colin was smoking, if it was some peyote or something, but you know, good on you, I guess, Colin.
Mistakes have been made, that's for sure.
But he did kind of redeem himself with Michael Conforto at 58.
And I thought that was too high.
You did. I mean, honestly, I had faith in Conforto. I knew that it wouldn't be a smooth ride. I knew he wouldn't exactly make an easy, seamless return. But at this point in the season, I thought the guy would be hitting already. Because, I mean, he just looks bad at the plate.
Yeah, he came back too early, I think. Like, just significantly too early. And he's got into his own head. So maybe this break will be a good thing. But, I mean, I don't know. I mean, Colin had Jay Bruce 18, Manny Margot at 33. You know, I had Margot at
35. I thought he was a lot for 20 steals. I mean, he still could get to the 20 steals. So,
yeah, if that's all you're banking on, then yeah, you might still have a chance to be right. Yeah. And then while you're dogging on me, Ben, you had Eddie Rosario ranked at 54th. So.
Hey, man, his average is better this year than it's been in a while.
So. And you have to expect that.
Yeah. But it's not like results. Yeah, you got to look forward, Ben. We're looking into the future. We're not playing Stratomatic. We're playing seasons past here.
Oh, I'm sorry, Ray. I didn't realize that Mr. Byron Buxton ranking of 16 gave you the all-knowing ability for Minnesota Twins outfielders. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but all right. So you but if hang on, I mean, I'll take my crow on Buxton because I totally screwed that one up. But if you're going to talk about Rosario hit 290 in 2017. So
yeah,
I
didn't think it was very likely to occur again. So that's on me though.
So it's not like that. I mean, Buxton, my God, I totally just got hoodwinked and duped by that talent and by the September that he had and the power speed combo. I was like, okay, this is going to be the year. I think I took him in like the fifth round in one of my last drafts, so they didn't have him in the league yet. I mean, obviously, we know how well that's worked out for me. But, I mean, you would imagine at some point they're going to call him back up. So now, tell me if I'm wrong. I'm just holding him on my bench. Because I think if he just gets up, I mean, he could have a stretch again like he did last September, where maybe he can make the difference in your league.
So he's like a 1 month of a year player. You just got to pick that month.
He might be. I mean,
you only have to pick a month. You know, it's in the second half, and it's probably September or October.
But I mean, the problem is he's hitting .232 in AAA, and he's striking out 30% of the time.
So he's performing to the same degree as he was in the majors.
No, he hit .156 in the majors. So this is an improvement. But I mean, it's just one of those things. You look at that September. You look at the talent, and it's just so – it was just – I should have known better.
Well, in regards to the Twins, since we're talking about Buxton and Rosario, I mean, this year I had said on numerous platforms I didn't expect the Twins to be as good. I'm pretty sure I've said it on our show numerous times. I just didn't expect them to be that good. I didn't expect them to compete for a wild card. I didn't think their offense was that good. Rosario last year had less than 80 RBIs, less than 80 runs, 27 home runs with 9 steals. I kind of thought that maybe he would hit a couple less home runs, roughly the same runs and RBIs. I mean, this year he's less than 20 RBIs and 20 runs away from what he had all of last year. He's only 8 home runs away from what he had last year. So he's significantly ahead of any pace that he had. And he's well ahead in average, that he's already 21 points ahead of what his average was last year. He's basically the one player on the Twins who has actually looked pretty good this year, because no one else has really looked as good as you thought. Maybe the only other player is Eduardo Escobar, and he's probably exceeded more expectations than not. But outside of those two, Dozier hasn't looked good. Snow hasn't looked good. Buxton hasn't looked good. I'm not really sure if there's really any other hitters that you really are like, oh, that guy has played well for this team this year. So,
no, I think you definitely hit it on the head with the Twins not being as good this year. I mean, the Twins obviously last year, maybe they kind of peaked a year too early, maybe. But I mean, a lot of things haven't gone right for them. And I mean, Bucks and Sano were probably the two biggest pieces.
All right, guys, why don't we move into some other players that we feel that we were very right on or very wrong on. So, Colin, is there any players that you really want to touch on at this time?
Well, I mean, one of the things that I thought you'd start off with, Ben, is how right you were about Giancarlo Stanton.
I'm so right on him. I was such a correct person. I mean, I had him ranked as 10th, so it's not like I was like, oh man, this guy is fucking trash. You know, it's like I didn't expect him to be as good as everyone said. Everyone has tough years when they get traded to the Yankees at the beginning, it seems. I didn't expect him to continue to have, you know, a 59 home run season with 123 plus runs and RBIs with a 280 average. It just didn't seem likely. I mean, his average has been roughly there, but as of right now, he is less than half of where he was all of last year for all of the major categories, except for stolen bases. He actually has more stolen bases this year than he had all of last year. But to me, he seemed like someone who was at the back half of the top 10 of outfielders. In a standard 5x5, he is currently ranked 11th. So, you know, I was pretty correct on him. And this was an argument among other Friends with Fantasy Benefits staff members that I had JD Martinez ranked so much, five spots higher than him, when everyone was saying that they're basically the same type of player. And I said, well, I think in a smaller sample size that JD is better. I expected them both to only play about 130 games this year. Right now, they're both playing basically all of the games. So unless injury strikes either one of them, it seems that JD is the better player out of the two of them. So I feel I was correct with that.
Yeah, you definitely were. And we were probably behind the bus on that one. But one of the guys that, you know, I was probably the most right on, and these are guys that I thought would be regressing, especially based off of where they were drafted, were Ryan Braun and Jake Lamb. So coming into the year, I was worried about Braun's playing time. I didn't think that he would stick at first base, and what do you know, he didn't. And then also Jake Lamb, I think with the humidor coming into Arizona, I thought that he would just become basically a power lefty that can't hit any left-handers. He did have an injury in the beginning of the season, but those are two of the guys that I was probably the most correct on based off the rankings that we're looking at from the preseason.
Yeah, I mean, if we're looking at third baseman ranks, I mean, I feel very wrong about Miguel Sano, who I had at 9. So, but, I mean, I totally can see where you were with Jake Lamb.
It did seem extreme though at 31, but I mean,
definitely helped. Colin's rank has been helped because of the injury, so that did help him. But he hasn't performed much differently than where he was last year. I feel that it's like, okay, I mean, to this point, he does only have 6 home runs in 192 at bats. I mean, look at Gleyber Torres, and in an extra 26 at bats, Gleyber Torres has 15. So, I mean, you can see that the power for Jake Lamb hasn't been there, and obviously has shown for other players as well.
I mean, just look at his ISO. His ISO is 239 in 2017. It's 135 this year. So, yeah, the power just – I mean, the injury didn't help, but the power just has not been there.
No, I mean, you've seen how it has affected Goldie, and Goldie finally had a good month to break out of it, but the problem is, I mean, Jake Lamb can't hit lefties at all, so that doesn't help. He's hitting 195 against them, basically, this year, so that's not helping. He's only hitting 229 in season, so that's basically that he's hitting roughly, what, 235 for against right-handers, so that's pretty bad. There's no power. He missed a bunch of time, and the humidor probably isn't helping in any capacity, so I'm pretty sure that Collins going to be – that's probably going to be one of Collins' most correct picks for this entire year. And, I mean, if you look at it, he's currently ranked 33rd in a standard 5x5 in of all third basemen. So even though Colin was significantly farther off than the rest of us, he's barely better – He's actually worse technically with his rating because Jake Lamb's actually worse than what Collins said he was going to be. So that's pretty bad in and of itself. I would expect that he has the ability to finish the season with like 17 home runs if he's actually able to get going. But I mean, would you be surprised if he only hits like 11 at this pace?
No, and that's definitely not what you were drafting, you know, as a top 15 third baseman. So, based off the injury and based off the regression, especially with the humidor coming in, you know, there's been so many different replacement level third basemen like Eduardo Escobar, like we touched on, or, you know, a Matt Chapman or someone, you know, at the beginning of the season that you could have just played right over Jake Lamb and, you know, probably gained a few more points in the standings for sure.
I mean, you would have been better off with Brian Anderson than Jake Lamb, and I know that we bashed Brian Anderson because he doesn't have a lot of power and he plays for the Marlins, and I mean, he doesn't add a lot to his counting stats, but at least he has, you know, more runs than a bunch of players on the year. He's only 2 runs behind Cody Bellinger, basically. He's got more RBIs than Cody Bellinger, so, you know, a player like that is someone who basically went undrafted in a majority of leagues, and maybe in deep leagues he was drafted, but he's someone that you could have had for free over Jake Lamb, and you would have had significantly more production.
Yeah, imagine. I mean, none of us ranked Anderson.
Yeah, and imagine, you know, taking Jake Lamb over Eugenio Suarez, who missed time, but still leads the NL with, 70-something RBIs?
Baez now leads, so that means he's pretty close. He's probably within a few RBIs, so.
With missing time, so.
Exactly.
I mean, it's frustrating to think that you could have had him at probably the same price, if not cheaper.
I mean, look at it this way. Jake Bowers has only been up for a few weeks, and he's only got one less home run than Jake Lamb on the season.
Yeah, Lamb just has looked terrible.
Yeah. Ray, are there any players that you want to touch on at this current time?
Yes, there is, actually. I mean, as we are watching the All-Star game, going into the season, this was not crazy at all. Nick Markakis, I was the only one of the three of us to rank him, and I gave him a sterling rank of 92 among all outfielders.
I'm sorry, I ranked him as my outfielder 18. You just can't see it. Sorry.
But I mean, just been updated.
But I mean, not to say Mark Higgins in general, but if there was ever an example that says this is why you need to be on top of that waiver wire the first few months of the season, it's Mark Higgins. I mean, obviously we know Markakis doesn't hit for power. That's why none of us really ranked him. But he's picking up the RBIs, he's picking up the runs, he's getting the batting average, he's in a good lineup, a lineup that is maybe even a little better than we thought it was going to be. But, I mean, that's just the example of why you got to be on that waiver wire and kind of churn through the last few spots of your roster, especially early in the season. I mean, you can grab somebody like a Markakis who none of us had ranked. Somebody like a Jesus Aguilar, who's up, it was up to Ben, he would just kick him to the curb. Ben, are you going to try to defend your honor there? You're just going to... I mean, or somebody like a Jose Martinez, who wasn't on Ben's radar.
I ranked him as an outfielder, Ray. I ranked him as an outfielder, all right? Not as a first baseman, but if you look at my outfield ranks, he's there.
Where is he in your outfield ranks?
90s.
94.
Hey, hey, man, at least Colin rang Scooter Jeanette. You and I didn't even rank him as an outfit.
I did not. That's another one, man. I mean, Jeanette's second half last year was there for everybody to see it. But actually, wait a second. I had Jeanette ranked higher than all of us at second base.
At second base, yeah.
Have him ranked at outfield, so.
I did not. I didn't realize he was eligible in the outfield. But, I mean, again, of the three of us, I had him at 23. Ben had him at 25. Colin had him at 29. Jeanette had an unbelievable second half. He had a little bit of a track record from a few years prior with Milwaukee. He's still just 27 years old. But, I mean, that's why, even if you're out of it, you got to pay attention to the second half of the season. Because Jeanette had a heck of a second half last year, and he's carried it forward into this year. And, I mean, if you take a look at him, there's no reason at this point not to expect it to continue. And I think he's played himself into becoming a core player with the Reds.
Yeah, well, people definitely didn't expect him to, A, hit for this high of average, and B, just produce like this. I mean, he's become one of the better run producers. And that team actually has three pretty good run producers. It has a player in Winker who gets on base. Schebler's been playing better as of late, as much as Colin hates to admit it. But, you know, there are some decent players on the team. They just really don't have any pitching. But let's just jump back on Nick Markakis for a quick second. I mean, last year he had such pedestrian numbers. He basically had 600 at-bats last year. He had 593. But he only had 76 runs, 76 RBIs, 8 home runs, and a 275 average. I mean, there's nothing there that makes you think that he really should be ranked unless you kind of need someone in a deeper type of league. I mean, this year he's already got more home runs. He's got 10. He's hitting 323. He has one more steal than he had all of last year. And he's already got 55 runs and 61 RBIs. So, I mean, he's already producing compared to where he was last year. The Braves lineup overall is better, so he has been benefited by that. Yeah, but it is like Ray said, you have to pay attention to the waiver wire. Ray, I do have a question for you. Well, I have two questions for you. One, can I ask why you hate Matt Kemp? And B, can I ask you why you like Michael Taylor so much? You had Michael Taylor ranked as 49 when Colin and I both had him unranked. And right, he had Matt Kemp at 85.
So for Michael Taylor, can we just say see Byron Buxton?
No, we can't, because Byron Buxton sucks too.
Exactly. I mean, that's the point. But I mean, again, I think Taylor, you got to give me a little bit of a break on. I'm not saying I deserve much because being the guy's hitting 240, and he has a 332 BABIP, and he has no power, but he has 24 stolen bases.
See, that's the thing. Steals will always help, and as much as I hate Billy Hamilton, I think he's a terrible player. Steals will help, and that's what pushes you up the ranks. So I don't blame you for having him there. I just, you know, I guess people at this point thought that it would be Adam Eaton, it would be Bryce Harper, and then they would have someone else up there, whether it was Michael Taylor, whether it was Victor Robles. I think people expected Robles to actually be up and participating for a good majority of the year, and that's probably why people weren't as high on Michael Taylor, but they knew they'd get some cheap steals out of him, provided that he actually got some playing time.
Yeah, Robles would have been up if he didn't get hurt, and then obviously Soto came up instead. But Hamilton, who we know you hate, who you're not exactly shy about, you had him ranked at 30, and he has 22 steals. And I had Taylor where?
49.
And he has 24 steals. So honestly, that being the case, because we know Hamilton doesn't hit for average anyway, I'm not necessarily ashamed about that. I mean, I feel obviously a lot better about that than you having Adam Eaton ranked 17.
To be fair, and I'm sure I can speak for Colin, we both expect him to be healthy this year and actually continue where he started last year. We thought that this lineup was probably going to be better than it has. They've actually been pretty bad this year overall. They have been underperforming. I thought he would lead off. I thought Trey would hit second. Harper would be good. Murphy would have been back and producing. I thought Rendon would have been good. So there was at least five players in that lineup right there that I thought could at least be decent enough that they could get him home, he could get some steals, he would hit for a good enough average and have some minor pop. I didn't expect him to, A, get hurt, and then, B, just not perform.
Yeah, I think the Nationals in a whole, besides Trey Turner and, you know, everyone that drafted Juan Soto, I think they've all underperformed. So, you know, that probably goes into our ranking of Eaton, Bryce Harper, you know, especially, you know, Daniel Murphy. We were all super high on him. And for him not to come back until, what, a month ago, it makes it look a little bit worse.
What? And then we'll go back on my Matt Kemp pick.
Yeah, why do you love Matt Kemp, Ray?
All right, we get it. Ben ranked Kemp 50th. I had him at 85. Colin had him at 87. Honestly, Colin, tell me if you felt differently. I honestly, number one, I didn't think he was going to stay healthy. Number two, I didn't think he was going to have play good enough to even have the job all year.
I didn't think he was going to make the team.
Yeah, that's really what it is.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't even very happy about my pick at 50. I just thought that there was a decent chance he could see some playing time, and he produces to the capacity where no one really cares about him. I mean, you do because it's fantasy, but, you know, the last couple of years, like, it's not like you've been super proud of everything, his numbers and all of that. Like, last year, he only had 19 home runs, 64 RBIs, 47 runs, and .276 average. It's not like that was anything special. But the thing was is that the Dodgers, A, probably were going to play him, and B, didn't really have a ton of other outfield options that should come in and actually hit consistently. And I figured that he was probably going to get about 400 at-bats, and I thought that the numbers he put up last year could be borderline top 50 if he was able to get some playing time with a better lineup than what he had last year in Atlanta. And he's outproduced what we expected. I mean, he's basically already met all of his numbers from last year, except he's hitting .310 and about 180 less RBI, 80 less at-bats.
He does have a .362 BABIP, but historically his BABIP, career BABIP's .339, so it's always been on the higher side. So, I mean, still, it's just one of those situations where I was wrong.
Yeah, I was 1 year late on Matt Kemp because I was all in on him last year whenever he was with Atlanta, and he started off the season, you know, really well, got a hiccup with the injury and kind of lost track of, you know, I guess just his fitness and overall well-being, and just kind of stayed on the DL and was irrelevant the rest of the year. So that was another thing that, you know, based off my ranking of him, is what I was going off of, because he just kind of seemed uninterested, and I didn't think moving to LA would help that, but obviously, like Ray, I was wrong.
And again, that's another reason why you got to watch that waiver wire first week of the season.
All right, I have a player for you guys. What do you think of Ian Desmond? Because Ian Desmond this year, he's hitting .235, but he's got 11 steals, 18 home runs, over 50 runs in RBIs. It's not like he's a great player, but he produces for fantasy, which is what you obviously want, regardless of how well they do or don't play. If you're in a league that can support that average, that's great. If you're in a points league, it obviously hurts because he strikes out a ton. But the stolen bases and the home runs help. What do you guys think of him? He's ranked fourth amongst first basemen in a traditional 5x5 roto. We all had him ranked outside the top 12, or I had him as 12. Ray had him at 13 and Colin had him at 18. Would you guys say that we're technically wrong on him, or is he just propped up by the stolen bases at this point?
I think the stolen bases are really inflating his, you know, his overall rank. Ian Desmond's very frustrating. I hate Ian Desmond. Ever since he left Washington and left Texas, he's been very frustrating to own based off the injuries and also based off of the talent in Colorado. I didn't think that he would get as much playing time as he has gotten because I thought Ryan McMahon was a better player. Also, David Dahl was going to be given a chance, and then, you know, that kind of shrinks, you know, his playing time a little bit. But the one frustrating thing about Ian Desmond is every time I try and start him, he goes 0 for 4 with 4 Ks. And every time I leave him on the bench, he has a steal and 2 home runs. So in a best ball format, he's perfect. He's perfect. But, you know, in my daily lineup leagues, he's very frustrating to own.
Yeah, you almost just got to set it and forget it. Deal with the crappy average and just know at the end of the year the steals and the homers are going to be there. I mean, they've consistently been there. Last year, notwithstanding, I mean, he still sold 15 bases last year. But, I mean, he kind of flirts with 2020 just about every year, or at least 2015. And, yeah, the average is bad, but it's those stolen bases, especially if you're getting them from first base, that gives you a nice little boost. So you kind of have to just deal with it. But like Colin said, if you're talking about Desmond when he goes 0-for-4 with 3 strikeouts, he's a bum, he's a terrible player. But if you're talking about Desmond on the night when he hits home run and steals a base, oh, he's great, he's great.
All right, guys, why don't we move over to the pitching side of things? And let's start off with you, Colin. What made you rank Carlos Martinez 28th? And how are you feeling about that at this current time of the year?
I'm feeling pretty good based off of most of the rest of the staff, you know, ranked him as a top 15 pitcher. And I thought he would struggle with command. I didn't, you know, of course, foresee an injury. But I think 28th was a little bit too low just based off of, you know, his average draft position during the preseason. It was a little aggressive to rank him that low, but he has not been the ace that everyone thought he would be this year.
What are your thoughts on Carlos Martinez, Ray?
It's for me, it boils down to one thing, and that's the control. Last year, he walked 3.12 batters per nine. This year, he's walking 4.67. To me, that's really the one thing where if I'm going to look at Martinez, I'm going to say that's the difference. The home runs are down. He's given up 4.9 per fly ball. So really, if you're going to say what's wrong with Martinez, I think we just point to the walks and say, you know, improve your control, improve your approach. Maybe second half will be better. 3.08 ERA isn't terrible. Could be a lot worse, but it's that 4.60 xFIP that really scares the crap out of you, and I think that's where the walks come in.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't super high on him. I had him ranked as 14th, and I felt like that was on average with where he probably would finish. And, you know, nothing great, but nothing too bad considering the type of workload he gets and the strikeouts and everything, but the injury did derail him, and he just hasn't looked great coming back. He has been walking a lot, so hopefully he can put together a better second half, but right now it seems that Carlos Martinez hasn't been one of the better buys for starting pitchers.
Props to Colin on that one.
Yeah, and then one of the pitchers that, you know, of course Ben was touting Gerrit Cole throughout the whole offseason, and he was definitely right, you know, based off of the way he started the season. But one of the things that I'm frustrated with is all offseason, especially on FWFB, I was touting the fact that, you know, if you don't get those top four pitchers, which during the offseason was Kershaw, Max Scherzer, Chris Sale, and then Corey Kluber, I was okay with waiting on pitcher and stacking my offense. So, and the perfect combo that I loved the most was Aaron Nola and Gerrit Cole. And unfortunately, I only have one team that I did that with. So that's one of the most frustrating things, you know, touting it and knowing that, you know, or knowing now that you were right about it and only having one share of it.
What place are you in with that team?
It's a draft champion. So right now I'm in, I think I'm still in first place, but it's pretty close. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, there's a player like Gerrit Cole who, I mean, even my rank of 15 feels low, but I knew that, and I had been saying this all offseason, I said, he's got a potential to be a top 8 pitcher, especially moving into a team that will allow him to use the breaking ball more. He had shown that he has the ability to strike people out. He was on a better team, so in the wins league, he's likely able to get significantly more chances to get wins than what he was going to get in Pittsburgh, even though Pittsburgh started off the year pretty good in general. So I do feel good about that. I mean, you know, everyone's going to have some good ones, some bad ones. I mean, look at our rank of Robbie Ray, Colin. You know, we both have it 11 and 10 respectively, and, you know, he just has extremely disappointed us.
Yeah, that's the one thing that, you know, Randy Haynes from my other podcast just keeps going on and on about, but he was so adamant about Jonathan Scope, and I've been right on that, and he's been right about how Robbie Ray's been so terrible. But you know, like you said, then you get some right, you get some wrong.
Yeah, I mean, I had Ray at 20, so I was clearly the low guy, and it's still way off.
Way too high, Ray. Way too high.
But in fairness to all of us, his xFIP is 358. ERA 503. 343 BABIP, so if you figure that comes down. He's given up close to 2 homers per 9 and a 20.4% home runs fly ball rate. So there's a little bit of room for regression there, but walks are always a problem with Ray, and again, he's walking 5 guys per 9 so far this year, but he's striking out 13.5. So I'm not ready to close the book completely. I mean, obviously, it's still ranking him 9th is still going to end up being too high no matter what, and the injury played a part of that. But I wouldn't necessarily say to give up and toss him in the garbage for the rest of the season either.
So would you buy him for the second half then?
I think I would. I think he is somebody I would buy for the second half.
I would also buy him for a second half. I was going to say that when Ray was finished. So Colin, you did beat me to that question. What about a player like Ohtani, who I had as the low person of our group as starting pitcher 44. Now, obviously, if you look at his player rater, he gets boosted by the fact he actually gets hitting stats as well. But is he someone who you guys feel we were all way wrong on because of the injury that he has sustained, and that 44 doesn't even do him justice because he's probably not even ranked close to the top 60 for a yearly thing because of that injury?
Yeah, I think that, you know, me and Ray had him ranked 26th and 27th respectively, but in all fairness, we weren't able to draft him at that spot because he was going so high in the preseason and right before the season. He was going in, you know, 6th, 7th, 8th round, and that was too rich for probably both of us, and especially you, Ben. So I'm pretty sure we don't have very many shares. I know I don't have, but... No, I don't have any shares of Shohei Ohtani this year, just because, like I said, he was taken so high. And, you know, in our draft recap for TGFBI in the offseason, I was basically dogging on everybody that drafted Ohtani so high, Robert Acuna so high, and Danny Salazar at all. So those, I'm glad that, you know, those are still out there, and I was actually right on those guys. But as far as Ohtani, adding in the batting portions, if you're able to split them up, you know, I know there's some sites where you have to either pick one and deal with it the rest of the week until you have to reset your lineup. But if you're able to benefit from his batting stats and his pitching stats, he's probably pretty close to a top 45 overall player just based off of, you know, a per game basis. Obviously not for the whole first half since he was injured, though.
Yeah, I mean, honest, I think the injury screwed it up. And if he didn't get hurt, it's very possible that Colin Knight rankings would have been too low for him. But I mean, he was such a hard player. There was all the hype, all the buzz. We really didn't know what to expect. He was probably one of the most divisive and hardest players to rank coming into the season.
Yeah, that was the thing. I ranked him so low because I knew he was going to get jumped up in draft boards. I knew that there was a chance that he could easily fail on both accounts, and as a result, he could easily just fail on the player rater because of it. But he was severely benefited by being able to put both stats together. So there is some benefit there, but obviously having this injury and him not pitching as a result makes it extremely difficult for anyone who drafted him in, say, a Yahoo League, that you can only draft him as a pitcher or a hitter only. So for a league like that, you really are getting screwed because you expected him to be a significantly better pitcher than anything, and now he's not even going to do that, and he's going to hit only. You know, that's really tough. So,
yeah, and I'm surprised it took you this long to actually move over to the number one overall pitcher in 5x5 ESPN player rater pool, where we had him, you know, Ray was the highest on him at 49. Ben, you were at 57, and I was at 61 on Trevor Bauer. So
Trevor Bear. Yeah, I mean, I'm so mad at Colin. I think I may hold this against Colin forever. But Ray, have you ever heard the story of how I had the ability to trade Robinson Cano earlier this year for Trevor Bauer? And I asked Colin what his opinion was, and he's like, no, Trevor Bauer sucks. I would never touch him. I'd rather leave a fantasy league than have Trevor Bauer on my team. And then, look at what happened.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say that the conversation didn't go exactly that way.
It went exactly that way. He didn't even know his name.
But I get the point. I mean, again, before the suspension, Cano was doing solid. But yeah, Bauer, the fact that Bauer was talented was never necessarily a question. He's also one of those guys that you either love him or you think he's an absolute moron. Or he's entertaining, depending on what side of the fence you're on, depending if you're an Astros fan or if you're on the Astros or not. If you're his teammate, if you wanted him to actually pitch in the playoffs instead of fix a drone. So, I mean, there's a lot going on with Bauer, but the dude is a talented pitcher, and it seems that everything is finally clicking, and Cleveland is kind of leaving him alone, letting him do his thing, and they're getting the results. I mean, we all missed the boat on Bauer, and I mean, I think he's going to probably be easily a top 20 pitcher for everybody next year.
Well, let me ask you a question. Do you have him... How high do you have him ranked in the Dynasty format? Would you say he's a top 15 player because of the strikeouts and the fact that this year he has only had three starts that he's gone less than six innings?
He's a top 15 pitcher for me in Dynasty, maybe. I actually traded him in my GFBI league because I'm good on pitching, need some help in the outfield. I actually traded him straight up for Eddie Rosario.
Yeah, I like that trade if you are in need of outfield help and you can support the loss of the pitching.
I thought it was a very fair offer. And it was a case if he needed a pitcher, I needed outfielders.
What about a player like Jeff Samardzija, who both Ray and I had as a top 39 pitcher, and Colin had him at 69. Ray, how do you feel about this so far this year? Do you think that it's just such a disappointment because of the injuries, or are you just unhappy with what he's been able to give you when he's been on the mound as well?
I mean, I think it's the injuries. I think it's everything. I think I just made a mistake in thinking that Samardzija was going to not only stay healthy, but just kind of produce when he was on the field. And I mean, it's almost better when when you can stash him on the DL instead of having to make the decision whether to cut him or actually start him. Because he seems almost lost out there.
And what about you, Colin? What are you thinking about with Jeff Samardzija? Are you extremely happy with your rank of him, or do you think that you feel a little cheated because of the injury?
Well, I mean, like Ray said, it's not only the injury, it's how he's performed on the field as well. So,
you clearly expect him to perform poorly on the field in general, but do you think that the injury has attributed to him performing even worse? Because I'm sure you didn't build an injury into your rank. I'm sure you just expect him to have a bad year in general. So do you think that he would have been as bad as he is now if he hadn't been injured?
I don't think he would be as bad as he is now, but I definitely thought that he would regress, and I don't think that he would have returned his draft value back. The one thing with Samardzija is he's been an innings eater prior to this year being hurt, but that's about it. I mean, that's about all the good that you can say about him. He he's been a over 4 ERA most of the time, especially in San Francisco, but also moving around from the Cubs as well in the A's. And then he doesn't provide that much as a strikeout pitcher. And then with San Francisco just being mediocre, there wasn't going to be a possibility of great win total as well. So, coming into the year, I wasn't looking to own him. I was not excited about the prospects of drafting him. And luckily, I don't have any shares of him.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I look at Samardzija as a player who basically was supposed to be someone who was pretty durable. He seemingly always felt like he was getting at 200 innings, and as a result, he was able to rack up a bunch of strikeouts as a result, even if he wasn't a good strikeout pitcher. But because of the durability, it helped prop him up because you would know that you would get strikeouts. He could get some wins. You expected the Giants to be a better team this year than what they were last year. So that was part of the reason of my ranking being where he was. All right, guys, why don't we talk a couple of relief pitchers and we'll wrap it up from there. Ray, why don't we let's talk a little Edwin Diaz.
All right, so now, as you know, I thought Diaz was going to be the first closer to lose his job. I was very, very down on Diaz, and I was very, very wrong. I thought I was kind of going over the top, but I mean, in comparison to Colin ranking him at 5 and Ben ranking him at 8, my ranking of him at 13 was kind of over the top, but he's probably the player or one of the players I was most wrong on. I mean, obviously he did really well at the end of last season. He lost his job for a small part of time. I was like, you know what? The guy throws hard. He's going to be inconsistent. I looked at the 4.36 walks per 9 innings last year. The fact that he gave 1.4 homers per 9, benefited from the 236 BABIP. I was like, all right, this guy is a regression waiting to happen. Obviously, he came out of the gates just absolutely on fire. Cut the walks down by two. Pumped the strikeouts up by 2.5 per 9 innings. And he's just flat out getting results. The ERA is down to 2.25 with the 1.46 FIP. I thought maybe I could, you know, had a little semblance of salvaging something when they traded for Alex Colome. But Colome is very, very securely in that eighth inning role. And Diaz has probably just been the best closer in the game so far in 2018.
Yeah, I like what he's been able to do. He hasn't really faced a lot of opposition this year. And he's done well. He hasn't faltered. You know, I wasn't exactly sure how good Seattle was going to be, which is why I only had him ranked at 8. I thought that they were going to be worse and not have as many close games, but that hasn't been the case. So,
yeah, and for me, ranking him at 5th, it was basically a full upside play. I wasn't really going out of my way to draft him. I know I got him in a few, you know, Fantrax best ball leagues, but you know, coming into last year, he had a lot of pressure on him to come up from the minors and basically take over that role. They, like you said, Ray, they kind of let him do his thing until he just kept letting in too many guys, and so they replaced him for a little while so he can figure out his control. And ever since then, he's been dominant. So, you know, with the Ks that he's providing, with all the saves that he's providing with Seattle, which, of course, I didn't see coming as well because I didn't think Seattle could, you know, produce as far as a winning baseball team as much as they have this year. But, you know, having 35-plus saves already at the All-Star break, he's definitely returned back a whole bunch of value, you know, based off of where he was drafted.
There are two players I kind of want to eat my crow on. That's Brad Hand, who I had at 19, and Archie Bradley, who I had at 10. When I had done my rank for Archie Bradley, I mean, we didn't find out until a couple of days before the season that it was going to likely be Boxberger. And when I had done these ranks, they were prior to that news coming out, and I hadn't updated it since then, obviously, because we didn't put a new set of ranks out because that happened like a day before the season. But, you know, Brad Boxberger basically has taken the place of Archie Bradley. I figured that whoever was going to get the Arizona closer job would likely be a borderline top 10 closer. I don't think that I'm completely wrong with that thought process. It's just, I guess, the wrong player. and then with Brad Hand, you know, I kind of expected him to get traded this year as a result, and I didn't think that San Diego was going to be a great team, so I didn't think he was going to have as many saves. He's done very well so far this year. And there's still a chance that he gets traded. So if he does get traded, I don't think that my rank of 19 is completely unjustified. Through the first half of the season, he's pitched closer to a top 12 to top 8 closer. But if he does get traded, then there's a chance that he only gives you top 25 value for the rest of the season. So I wouldn't say that that's the worst that I've had in my long-standing bad ranks.
Yeah, I think I agree with you with the Arizona situation. You just had the wrong guy because in every draft that I did in the last round or second to last round, I would just pick up Brad Boxberger because he was a guy that I was touting. I didn't get a chance to update my ranks before the start of the season and after he was named the job, but he would probably be close to about a top 12 fantasy closer for me. And I ended up with him a lot on my teams and, you know, reap the benefits for sure. And as far as Brad Hand, I was the highest on him. I had him ranked 10th. I just thought I saw a lot of Andrew Miller in him. Luckily, not this year's Andrew Miller, but more so the past couple of years where he's just dominant. They did use him last year more as a multi-inning guy before he got the closer's job. And I thought that his Ks would just translate right into that ninth inning role. I am a little nervous that he might still be traded after the All-Star break, but I still think he'll provide enough as far as ratios and Ks, and especially in a saves and holds league, to still be owned.
Ray, do you have any thoughts on either of these two players?
I thought Boxberger was going to get the job beginning of the season, but I mean, as you can tell, my rank, I think I ranked him 28th. I didn't think he was going to be this good. I thought it was going to be one of those situations where end of the season, he's going to lead Arizona in saves. I thought they were going to stick firmly with Bradley in the 7th, 8th inning. So I didn't think he was going to end up being the 10th ranked reliever in all fantasy baseball. But I thought it was going to be Boxberger, maybe like a Yoshi Hirano. I thought it was going to be maybe a few other stragglers coming in there. Maybe I didn't think Arizona was going to be as good. But, I mean, in hindsight, I was taking Boxberger late everywhere I could. Maybe I should have just ranked him higher.
The last player I want to talk about is Brandon Morrow. I was the highest of the three of us. I had him ranked 11th. I really expect him to be able to stay healthy for a good portion of the year, and so far he's really been able to do that. I think the Cubs have been somewhat of a disappointment in terms of saves because of how good Wade Davis was last year compared to where Brandon Morrow is this year, but Brandon Morrow is still having a pretty good year. I don't think anyone's really going to disagree with that. And I think that considering that he probably didn't have a super high price tag in a majority of leagues, I mean, obviously it depends, but he only had an ADP of 202.5. Right now he's an 18th ranked relief pitcher in a standard 5x5. And, I mean, he has great numbers. You would like to see more strikeouts from him in general, but, you know, he's basically averaging a strikeout per inning. And I can't imagine that you would expect a lot more from someone who you had that low of a rank.
For me, my issue was that I didn't think he was going to stay healthy all year. That was really what it came down to. I thought the Dodgers burnt him out last year. And I thought that Carl Edwards would end up taking the job at some point, probably sooner than later.
Yeah, that was my thought process as well. I was tentatively optimistic for his season by ranking him 17th. I thought that, you know, as long as he's healthy, he's going to be able to close for the Cubs. But I also ranked Carl Edwards Jr. a little bit higher. I drafted him in a lot of saves leagues just as a, you know, stash possible once Brandon Morrow goes on the DL, which I thought was inevitable. Then Carl Edwards Jr. would just slide in and take over and might not look back. But, of course, right whenever Morrow goes on the DL, Carl Edwards is already on the DL, so there is no chance for that. But as far as moving forward this season, I think he's shown that last year wasn't a fluke. He definitely still has enough in his arm to perform, you know, pretty highly as a closer for the Cubs. And especially if they go on a run, he might be a second-half closer to look out for sure.
All right, Ray, why don't you tell our listeners where you can be reached and what you're working on?
I am on Twitter at Ray_Kuhn_28. Still plugging away on baseball, and we got football coverage starting. Believe it or not, preseason games are going to be here before we know it, for better or worse.
And what about you, Colin?
You can find me at CWeatherWax13. I'm still trying to finish out this baseball season. Probably do some more podcasts for baseball, but like Ray said, we're trying to get in the swing of football season. We've done a few division previews and position previews out on FWFB. Me and Ben did one, and I think there's a few more coming out as well, so check those out for sure.
And you can find me on Twitter at BBrantsFWFB. You can find me throughout the offseason doing basketball podcasts. There's obviously been a lot of free agency and stuff that we're going to cover in the next coming weeks. Keep looking for me on fantasy football. As Colin said, we already put one show out. There's going to be more coming in the next few weeks. And we also do the Push Accept podcast, which now that we'll have some more trades for the second half of the year, as trade deadlines have passed, we'll be able to discuss some of those. And for the weeks that still have trade deadlines, continue to send us your trades. Also, we would like people to remember to go to podcastawards.com and remember to nominate us for the People's Choice and the Sports Category Awards. We would be very appreciative of all your votes. From the rest of us at Friends with Fantasy Benefits, have a great baseball season, everyone.